Okay, so our speaker for tonight is Sherry T, and she's going to be sharing about her recovery. Take it away, Miss Sherry.
Thank you, Zee. My name is Sherry, and due to extensive work with the 12 Steps and a good home group and wonderful sponsorship and a loving higher power, I have not felt the need to self-sabotage in a very long time. And for that, I am extremely grateful. I should let you know that my childhood was terrifying. I am a ritual abuse survivor and also an incest survivor. My father is a drug dealer. My mother's side of the family, half of it is an organized crime family in Pennsylvania, and the other half belongs to a religious cult, hence the ritual abuse. And so it was an ordeal in every direction. I will say that one of the things that I didn't realize at the time was such a gift was that no one felt the need to hide any of this stuff from me. So in fact, I was talking to a friend about it the other day. She said, well, how did you know your father was a drug dealer? And I said, well, you know, because when he started dealing drugs, my parents sat me down and explained it to me. You know, this is what daddy's going to be doing, and, you know, it's very important that you don't tell people, and, you know, da-da-da-da, and the illegality of it. And which I guess seemed very odd to her, and I guess it probably is very odd, but it was my experience, so it seemed normal to me. I had the opportunity to watch what happens when people go down the drain in addictions and know exactly what it was. And that has been a great gift to me. One of the other gifts that is, I'm not going to say unique to me, but it's a gift that is rare enough. I never felt like if that happened to those people, that it wouldn't happen to me. I always thought, oh, my God, if they do that and they get that result, if I do that, I'm going to get that result, too. So that was also a gift. In my family, especially with my dad, he used to play this game. Now, this is not a literal game. This is a mind game. But basically, imagine a basket and a ball. So he has the basket, I have the ball. I throw the ball, and then he can move the basket. And my father would move the basket so that I couldn't get the ball into the basket. And this was a very treacherous game. And I felt compelled to try over and over and over again to succeed at something that he was hell-bent on keeping me from succeeding at. And I didn't catch on for a long time to the fact that if I did manage to get the ball into the basket against his will, I wasn't going to be rewarded for that. I was going to be punished because what he really wanted to do was keep me from succeeding. And it was very painful. But this was that ongoing undercurrent of just wild dysfunction. And so between that kind of stuff going on in the house, the sexual abuse, you know, the religious cults, I was miserable. I was absolutely miserable. I was a raging fury. I didn't know how to make the pain stop. I tried everything that I could think of. And I knew, you know, that alcohol was not a good choice for me. You know, I knew I came from a family of alcoholics and addicts, and I knew that if it did that to them, that it would do those things to me also. But in the end, my father is a happy drunk, so you get a couple drinks in him and he's charming. The rest of the time, he's, you know, impossible. And so finally, I just gave in. I just thought, you know, if I can just get 10 minutes where I'm not miserable, it'll all be worth it. Even though I knew I was obviously an alcoholic, you know, having not taken a drink at that point. But I just thought, I just need 10 minutes rest from this misery that just, you know, just consumes me, just absolutely consumes me. And so I drank. But drinking doesn't make me more pleasant like it does my father. It doesn't make me, you know, more miserable because, you know, there was no room for increase. I was already at the upper limit there. But I was so disappointed. But I kept trying it, you know, just in case the next drink was the drink that was going to work. I never drank heavily because I don't have to. I cannot guarantee my behavior after two sips. And also, being a control freak, you know, and a great chemistry student, I thought I could manage the alcohol. So I would drink a drink, and then I would drink a pitcher of water because I thought, you know, by diluting it, I would control the effect that it, you know, the negative consequences. By the way, this also doesn't work. And so after a couple of years of trying that on and off, I finally had to stop drinking. Not because I was drinking so heavily, but just because the frustration and the agony of it not working and the misery just consuming me. And when I stopped drinking, it got worse. The misery got worse. And I figured this out the other day. What it was that when I was still trying the drinking, I had hope. I had hope that maybe one of these drinks was going to make me feel better. And when I stopped drinking, I realized there was no hope. And I just got worse. I attempted suicide a couple of times. It was just darker and darker. And after about 2.5 years, my grandfather, who was one of my incest perpetrators, died. And I walked down the street, said to a friend of mine who knew I wasn't drinking, pour me a drink. I took two sips of wine, walked up the street crying hysterically because I had ruined this abstinence that I had worked so hard for. And my cousin was there. My cousin is like 15 years older than I am, and she lives in Indiana, and I never see her. I mean, it was very, very rare for me to ever see Doreen. And there she was standing in the street smoking, because you can't smoke at my grandparents' house. And she looked at me and she said, "Well, I know you're not upset that Grandpa's dead, so what is your problem?" And I was like, "Oh, I drank after 2.5 years." And she just looked at me and said, "Well, honey, why don't you go to AA?" And I said, "What's AA?" And she 12-stepped me. And that's how I got into recovery. And where the drinking didn't work, the steps did. The steps were the beginning of hope. You know, they didn't guarantee me that they would solve everything, but they did promise that if I kept working at it, you know, that things would improve, and that more than anything else, I wouldn't have to be alone with it. Because the isolation, you know, was a big driving force for the misery. So I got into recovery, and my first sponsor, bless her pointed little head, who we all called Mary Mary Quite Contrary, because she had 18 sponsees, and no matter what you told her, she would tell you the opposite, which is how she got that name, was a wonderful sponsor, and she gave me a lot of really, really powerful tools. The first one was called Mirror Inventory, and I love this tool. It's where you take somebody else's inventory, you do not tell them that you've taken their inventory, and you reflect it back on yourself, because it's so much easier to see other people, and it's so hard for me to see myself, because eyes look out. And so it's, you know, there you are, and so it's much easier for me to figure things out by looking at your life, especially if I'm not commenting on it to you. The other thing that she taught that I really love is she taught me to pray with paper dolls. So if I'm having problems with you and you are not doing what I want, I make a paper doll of you. I figure out what I want you to learn. I find the place in the book, any book that is teaching that thing. I tie you into it so you cannot escape. I feel better and you are unharmed. So I found that to be also a wonderful tool. Mary took me through the steps in the first 6 months. And then she took me through again in the next 6 months. And I have been doing, you know, a full, complete tour through the steps every 6 months ever since. And on August 13th, God willing, and the creek don't rise, it will be 30 years. And that practice has served me very, very well. And I am eternally grateful for her diligence and willingness. One of the things that used to trip me up was defects and the way I thought and felt about character defects and how defeated I felt about character defects. You know, my mom is a perfectionist, and in response to that, you know, I felt very damaged and very broken. And I've listened to a lot of circuit speakers, and I have found them really, really helpful. And I remember Roger from Chicago explaining about character defects and that a defect, you know, if a vase has a defect, it has, you know, it has a flaw in it. It's not shattered shards on the ground. You know, that's not a vase. That's, you know, broken glass. You know, a defect is a flaw. Like if you have a flaw in fabric, you know, it's a place that needs to be rewoven. But it doesn't mean that the whole yardage is not usable. And, you know, my all-or-nothing thinking used to really get me. You know, if there was one imperfection, oh, my God, it's the end of the world. And, you know, when he was explaining that, it was so helpful because it was like, oh, these are just things that you have to either work through or work around. But it's not the end of the world. And also, there is in the big book, in the third edition, because that's the one I grew up with, it's Dr. Addict Alcoholic. I don't know what the name of it is in the fourth edition, but he happens to be a friend of my current sponsor, Nan, Dr. Paul, and he talks about his magical magnifying mind. And oh boy, do I have a magical magnifying mind. And the things that I focus on are the things that get bigger. And when I focus on negative things, the negativity gets big, engulfs me, I'm done. You know, there's no way around it. And it really kicks my ass. And when I learned to focus on the positive things, you know, and how well things work when I work my program, well, gosh, my program got bigger and my life got better. And those things, you know, were dynamic in a way that I could have never imagined. One of the biggest things, I will say, I think more than anything else that tripped me up and kept me stuck in addiction to misery was procrastination. Like I said, my mother is a perfectionist. So in the face of perfectionism, I would procrastinate because, God forbid, you know, if we moved forward, there was going to be, you know, punishment. There was going to be, you know, something, some bad ordeal. And so I started doing, as, you know, all 12-step programs suggest that we use outside literature. So I started using a lot of outside literature as well as the inside literature, the conference-approved literature. And I, you know, I did PMLities, Facing Codependence, and Courage to Heal, and Wishcraft, and, you know, Can't Afford a Luxury of a Negative Thought, and Life 101, and Do It, and, you know, all of those kinds of things. And I learned a lot of tools to try to manage my procrastination. When I came in, there were slogans, not just the regular slogans, you know, not just the easy does it and live and let live slogans, but also slogans like, if I'm not happy with what I have, how could I possibly be happier with more? That was really helpful to me. You know, I took that question really to heart. Like, okay, seriously, you know, what is it that I think is going to make me happier if I'm not happy with this? And that was a very, it was like putting leverage on this thing that kept me down. You know, and I was able to kind of move it a little bit off of my, I felt like off my windpipe, you know, and I started to be able to breathe. Another slogan that I felt I found incredibly helpful was, even tickets on the 50-yard line don't interest me because I came to play. Because if I'm not in the game, then there is no game. And this is about me living my life. And that was the beginning of really going, oh yeah, this misery is not my life. My life is my life. And this misery is a burden. And I have to find a way not to carry it. One of the other circuit speakers that I just really, really, really love is Scott R. He's actually from the East Coast, but he lived on the West Coast most of his life in West Hollywood. And I loved to listen to his speaker CDs. He's just awesome. And as my sponsee Lisa would say, he's a friend in my head. He was absolutely a friend in my head. And he was talking about doing the step work and, you know, how to solve things and how to make amends and how to, you know, do all of this stuff. And his sponsor said to him, you know, treat your inventory like it's your spiritual task and let's go, man, let's go. And I don't know what it was about that, but I would replay that over and over and over again. I had this thing on my CD player where I could click it and it would go back 3 minutes, and I would play that 3-minute segment over and over and over again. And finally it clicked in, and I was released from procrastination. I mean, it left me like the desire to drink left me. It was amazing. I got it. It was like, oh, I don't want to do this for me, you know, because I don't know how to do this for me. But I will do this in a relationship with my higher power. You know, my inventory is my gift from my higher power. And, you know, it's my spiritual task. This is our partnership. This is how this works. And the procrastination just, it evaporated. It was fascinating and exhilarating, and I can remember giggling just endlessly about it. What was really funny was over time, I became a circuit speaker, and I was speaking in San Francisco. I was the kickoff speaker at Living Sober, and at the end, after I had spoken, and you talk to a lot of people afterwards, the last person that talked to me was the guy who was going to be the spiritual speaker on Sunday. And he was from, he is from Hollywood. And he hugged me and he said, oh, honey, we miss Scott so much. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, oh, God, we miss Scott so much. And, you know, I know you miss him. You know, you must miss him too. And I said, Terry Sue, what? I don't know what you're talking about. And he realized that I didn't know that Scott had died. And I was horrified. And I called my sponsee, Lisa, in New Jersey. I was, you know, in San Francisco. And I said to her, oh, my God, Scott's dead. And we just cried and cried. Mind you, we have never met this man. He was just a friend in our heads. But, you know, we of this program is so phenomenal that, you may never meet the people that help you. And so as, you know, I have traveled this, there was another circuit speaker that I just love, and he says this wonderful thing, which is, come all the way in, sit all the way down, and stay. And I just love it, and it was so meaningful to me. And I didn't want to have happen with him what had happened with me with Scott. So I reached out to him. His name is Gary. I reached out to Gary on Facebook, and I said to him, look, this is what happened, you know, between me and Scott, and I never met him, and he, you know, he helped turn my recovery around, and I don't want that to happen between you and I, because you have helped turn my recovery around, and the things that you've said have been so meaningful to me. And he was like, oh, thank you so much for telling me that. And this is a story, because I know Scott. I knew Scott in person. We used to speak together a lot, and he was with Sandy B, who is also a circuit speaker, who we all also love. And he said, and Scott was having this problem, and he was talking to Sandy about it. And Sandy said to him, all right, well, you need to go and see a movie. And Scott was like, oh, which movie? Which movie do I need to see? And Sandy said, it doesn't matter. All you need to go is see the movie and realize it's all projection. And I howled. And thanked Gary so much, and Gary laughed. He said, yeah, it stuck with me too. So in the course of us talking, and I was telling him about how what Scott's sponsor had said had changed my life, Gary explained to me that his sponsor was Paul R. from the magical magnifying mind of the Big Book. And I just laughed, and I thought, yeah, it's amazing. We come around and come around, and we touch people over and over again sometimes and don't even know it. And it was, you know, such a gift, such a wonderful, wonderful gift. And I'm so grateful to be free of the procrastination and free to have and live in the hope that I experience every day, because I am with the most amazing people in this recovery. I have two wonderful sponsors, but more important than my sponsors are my sponsees. I have the privilege, I'm going to cry. I have the privilege to work with some of the most amazing people, some of the most dynamic people, and I am so grateful to have the opportunity to do step work with them, to do all kinds of work with them, and grow in this wonderful life that we have together. Because, like I said, thanks to the step work, thanks to my home group, thanks to my sponsorship and my loving higher power, I no longer feel the need to sabotage myself and live in misery. So thank you for giving me this opportunity to share, and thank you for being here. And with that, I pass.
Alina, you may be on mute.
Yeah, and I'm trying to make it stop the recording, and it says that reconferencecall.com has suddenly stopped for no reason. Okay, let me see if I can stop it here. Gosh, I hope
That's
we got
right.
that.
I'm really excited to hear your voices, because I thought for a minute that I had spoken into dead air for a half an hour.
No, not at all. No, it was wonderful. It was great. I just wanted to stop the recording before we start sharing. I heard it say you're recording now, but now I'm not seeing where it says it suddenly ended. So I guess it's HP deal, and if we're meant to have the recording, we will, and if we don't, we won't. I'm so sorry. So thank you so much, Sherry. That was just absolutely amazing. And I just want to share a little something more. Sherry right now is going through an illness that is so rare, they are doing experimental treatments. And she has given it all to her higher power. And she just trusts that if her higher power wants her to be here, she will. And if not, she won't. And And to me, that's a level of surrender that I just find breathtaking, and I'm so grateful that she's in my life. Okay. You are so welcome, and thank you for sharing. I really appreciate it. Okay, let's go around and see who's got some stuff they want to share. Bree, I know that you're here. Would you want to share anything? Bree, you may be on mute.
I was on mute. I was. Sorry, this is Bree.
No worries.
And it was, thank you for sharing, Sherry, your story. It was really, I just appreciate you taking your time and being with us tonight and telling us and speaking with us. And, I was just really moved, and I wanted to say thank you.
My pleasure.
You're welcome. Shirley, would you like to share?
Well, thanks, and thanks so much, Sherry, for coming on and sharing so much about your recovery. It's heartening to hear. What I got out of it is the reminder, yet again, I can't put a toe in and expect to get it back. You know, the risky thinking that if I